The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The final tennis Grand Slam of the year, the US Open, is getting underway this week at Flushing Meadows in New York. This year, by the way, marked the 50th anniversary of the African-American Arthur Ashe, for whom the main tennis stadium in Flushing Meadows is named, winning the Wimbledon men's singles title. But it's also 75 years this very week since the very first African-American player was allowed to enter the US Open. Althea Gibson was her name. And to tell us more about this pioneering tennis star, Cameron Hill from Off the Ball. Cameron, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
I'm very well. Now tell me about Althea.
So she was born in Silver, South Carolina, on the 25th of August, 1927. So her 98th birthday would be next week. Her family moves to New York during the Great Depression, out of the South during Jim Crow, to the veritable African-American sort of haven that was Harlem at the time. So right at the time of the Harlem Renaissance, she drops out of school in her early teens, plays paddle tennis in the streets of Harlem, becomes really, really good, and plays basketball and competes in street fighting as well. She was part of a basketball team called the Mysterious Girls, which is just a fantastic name. Really complicated relationship with her father. So he would bring her to the roof of their building in Harlem and would box with her to toughen her up. Now, he always told her repeatedly that he had wanted a son and that he was going to treat her as a boy for her upbringing. So it did toughen her up. But according to her autobiography, she was so fearful of her father's beating that at one point she lived with the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children. She also became really good friends with Sugar Ray Robinson, who people will know, one of the greatest boxers of all time. He trained with her. So all this time, she's becoming quite an accomplished street fighter.
Now, tennis was white, basically.
Oh, yeah. Completely white. And the U.S. Lawn Tennis Association was a whites-only organization at this point, so no black players permitted to join it. There was the rival American Tennis Association, the ATA, set up in 1916 to promote tennis players from the African-American community. And Gibson, for her paddle tennis abilities, was noticed by Dr. Robert Walter Johnson, a Virginia physician with a big involvement in the African-American tennis community, and a guy called Hubert Eaton, who was a civil rights activist and tennis player.
So you have this organization which is going to foster black tennis, but even within that, there's a bit of snobbery.
Yeah, quite an elitist place, it seems. Tennis still mainly played by the black bourgeoisie. So Gibson, as a woman, as an African-American, and as someone from the mean streets of Harlem, a very working class area, was an outsider in every sense of the word. But she was making huge waves in tennis. She captured the ATA's Women's Singles Championship for the first time in 1947 and wouldn't relinquish the title until 10 years later. Her style is class. She describes her own style as aggressive, dynamic and mean. And I feel like her boxing background adds to that. But that's a cool way to describe your own game.
Now, how do you make a breakthrough, though, as a black athlete into the elite U.S. Lawn Tennis Association?
Well, Johnson and Eaton had been searching for someone that would be perfect at this time. They wanted to get this absolutely spot on. They were impressed with Gibson's skill and saw her as the best chance for a black player to break into the USLTA with an approach that journalist David Law describes as married with diplomacy. So instead of all the shouting and sort of antagonizing the group, they wanted to sort of get in and appease the USLTA. Then they saw Gibson as their best chance to integrate a player like that.
Now, who's Alice Marble and where does she come into the story?
Well, she is ultimately, she sets the ball rolling in Gibson being integrated. So you might remember her from last year. We talked about the Irish Battle of the Sexes, where she played Cyril Kemp at Fitzwilliam in 1939. She won 18 Grand Slam titles. She might have been a spy for the Allies in World War II. We're not sure. And she broke convention by wearing white shorts on the tennis court in 1932, which was not the style at the time. So she was already a trailblazer and quite outspoken. And she writes this letter published in the American Tennis Magazine on the 1st of July, 1950, saying, "If tennis is a game for ladies and gentlemen, it's also time we acted a little more like gentle people and less like sanctimonious hypocrites. If Althea Gibson represents a challenge to the present crop of women's players, it's only fair that they should meet that challenge on the court." And that's what paves the way for Althea Gibson to
enter. If you want to be the best, you've got to beat the people who would also want to be the
best. She's too good to ignore, yeah, is basically Alice Marble's point. So she goes through, she goes to Forest Hills, where it was played at the time, in Queens and New York in 1950, gets through the first round, and her second round match against the 1947 champion Louise Broff drew 2,000 spectators, not all there in a positive light, many of whom cheering on Broff by using the like racial slurs. Beat the N-word was repeated quite a number of times, but Gibson managed to block it out, saying she was too arrogant and antisocial to notice, which is great. She was about to win the match, in fact. Score at 1-6, 6-3, 7-6. So they're into the final set. Gibson just needs one more game to win. And Bertram Baker, who's the executive secretary of the ATA at the time, described what happened as the day the gods got angry. So according to Sally Jacobs in the New York Times, torrents of rain suddenly began to fall from the darkening skies. Fans raced for cover as a bolt of lightning shattered one of the stone eagles atop the stadium. Play was suspended. So this goes on for 10 minutes. So they call off the game, resume it the next day, and then Broff beats her comfortably, I think, within 11 minutes.
Okay, so there was almost a Hollywood ending to the story, but not quite.
Not quite, no.
So then she carries on. She's not to be deterred by this defeat.
Yeah, and she makes her Wimbledon debut the following year, the first ever black player to be invited to the All England club. Britannica.com explains that Gibson had become noted for her dominant serves and powerful play. Steve Flink, a tennis historian, believes Gibson pioneered the serve and volley aggressive style later adopted by Billie Jean King, Margaret Court and the Williams sisters. But Gibson seems to have been uncomfortable with being remembered as a pioneer only. I don't consider myself to be representative of my people, she told a reporter in 1957. I'm thinking of me and nobody else. Her race was still a sticking point, so one of her closest friends in tennis was a British player named Angela Buxton, who was Jewish. They became doubles partners in part because other players refused to partner with them. So a Jewish player and a black player. And Buxton had escaped from Europe with her family to South Africa as a young child, where she became friends with a black girl there. But her parents, who were reminded constantly that they were, quote, guests of the government, feared for how they would be treated if this was found out, and they forbid Angela from being friends with the girl. So she had a lot of baggage in this capacity as well.
Okay, so now we come almost to the breakthrough.
Yeah. So 1956 is when she really hits the scene. She wins the French and Italian singles titles, the women's doubles titles with Buxton at Wimbledon and Roland Garros. 57, she wins the Wimbledon women's singles and doubles titles, the US women's singles title. She retains all three the following year, as well as the Australian doubles title, and reached the final in the singles. So in this three-year period, she's prolific.
And now, tennis was an amateur game at the time.
This is the real tragedy, because she made little to no money out of this incredibly successful period. She does turn pro in 1958, but it wasn't that lucrative. There was very little prize money for women's players at the time. She did publish her autobiography called I Always Wanted to Be Somebody in 1958, which Billie Jean King read over 24 times as a teenager. She tried to launch a singing career, was on the Ed Sullivan Show twice. She wasn't successful. And she takes up professional golf in 1964, again, another bastion of whites only sport, and was the first African-American member of the Ladies Professional Golfing Association in 64.
Multi-talented person. In the end, what happened to her? I mean, did she fall in hard times?
Indeed. So she wasn't, as we mentioned earlier, not one of those more public-facing pioneers and trailblazers, didn't love that role. So she kind of falls into obscurity in the 70s and 80s. Her last public tennis appearance came in 1990 when she came to watch Athena Garrison in that year's Wimbledon singles final. It was a stark reminder of how little had really changed for African-American female players. Garrison had no kit sponsor right up until reaching that final. And by the mid-90s, Gibson was seriously struggling both financially and with her health. And here's former pro tennis player Mary Carrillo speaking to the Tennis Podcast back in 2020 about how female tennis players reacted when they heard about Gibson's plight.
I think, like Arthur Ashe, I think they knew exactly what they were meant to be, you know, from a pretty early age. They knew they could be groundbreakers. But, you know, she had a far sadder life than Arthur. And then towards the end of her life, when she wasn't well and she couldn't pay her bills and she couldn't take proper care of her physical needs, and sadness had just swallowed her up. The players, the WTA players, were told that she was destitute. And I remember we had sort of an emergency meeting of players. And a lot of people, you're right, a lot of people didn't even know who she was. You know, she played at a time, you know, in the late 50s. And tennis wasn't open yet. She missed out on all of that. And here she is, she's got no money. So a bunch of us were sitting around a big old table, And, you know, someone suggested, well, we should get her, we have to let her know that we appreciate her. We should get her a plaque. We should get her something from Tiffany's. And I'll never forget Billie Jean King, who almost never, you know, got that excited and lost her temper in a meeting like that. She said, she needs money. She needs money. That's what we have to give her. And like she sort of, Billie just sort of set us all straight. Here's this great champion, this important woman, this pioneer in the game, and she had nothing. And that's what we did. We all, you know, put in some money and helped her. And for a while, it sustained her.
Now, she almost didn't make it.
So things get really bad in 1995 when she telephones her old friend, Angie Buxton, Angie Baby, as she calls her, and said she was calling to say goodbye. She was going to kill herself. And Buxton intervened and said, wait just a minute, had a letter describing Gibson's plight and calling for contributions placed in a prominent tennis magazine, and funds begin to pour in. Gibson pulls out of her slump, bought a silver Cadillac convertible, and lived for almost another decade. So it's a fantastic turnaround.
Fantastic turnaround. So she lived at least in some comfort in her old age. Is she remembered in any significant way?
Well, unsurprisingly, it is Billie Jean King who leads the charge against the USTA for two decades to properly recognise Gibson's contribution to the women's tennis. A statue was installed in 2019 at Flushing, joining Ash and King as pioneers commemorated at the grounds. And this year, the US Open have teamed up with Marvel to produce and distribute a new and original comic book spotlighting Althea Gibson and the Fantastic Four. 40,000 copies will be distributed during the tournament to highlight 75 years since Gibson made her debuts at the championships, and the singles draw gets underway on Sunday. So a good end to a difficult story.
Althea Gibson was her name, a true pioneer in tennis, an African-American, and no doubt they'll try to obliterate that history too. If Trump goes to visit Flushing Meadows, they'll probably hide the statue.
Absolutely. It'll be the Donald Trump arena.
Cameron Hill from Off the Ball, thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.